We're also going to Jakarta, where there's an opportunity perhaps to completely skip a generation. I think there'll be many Indonesians who will never know what a petrol car is.
We Drive the City, the official Mercedes-Benz EQ Formula E podcast. Welcome. This is the second episode of our podcast. Today's guest is Jamie Regal, CEO of the ABB FIA Formula E Championship. Team principal Ian James and his guest carpool through Stuttgart with the Mercedes-Benz EQC, and they reflect on the first 100 days of Jamie's new job, Jamie's past in football and soccer, and his childhood memories of the Canadian wilderness. Jamie also gives some insights into his future plans with Formula E and his vision for future cities and sustainability. Enjoy.
So, let's get this started. You've now been in the job for 4 months, about.
Yeah, started mid-September.
They always say the kind of you kind of get that first 100 days to find your feet and to make your mind up of how you want things to go. You've had that leeway now, and you're beyond that. How are things going? What are your thoughts about Formula E as a series, as a championship, and as a concern?
Well, look, it's been an amazing first 4 months, and I think I'm still going to take some liberty that I've got a little more time to observe. It said at the beginning of the season I would take most of season 7 to try to observe before my any crystallized views. Mm-hmm. But clearly have a good sense now of, you know, the championship. I think from a racing perspective, I mean, the first 3 races have all been incredibly competitive and unpredictable, as we saw. So that's core to the product. And then I think the biggest positive surprise that I've seen is just the degree to which everyone in our ecosystem, whether it's ourselves as the championship, the teams, the sponsors, the drivers, you know, how aligned they are on the overall vision and the mission. And I think that's quite rare in sport. And that's been really refreshing.
I don't know how you found it, because you've come from a sporting background that wasn't necessarily involved with motorsport, but in motorsport you often find or hear about the stories of the politics that go on behind the scenes. And I think for me, one of the things that I found incredibly refreshing is whether it's between FIA and the FIA or FIA and the teams, or that triumvirate you've got there, there's actually a sense that everybody's got a common goal and a vested interest to make the series as good as it can be.
No, that's exactly right. The level of commitment to the overall vision around accelerating electric vehicles is there. And then as it manifests itself in everything from the regulations to the commercial model to how we're thinking about building the championship, mm-hmm. everyone's on the same page. I mean, a very simple example that would never happen in other sports is I regularly get phone calls and text messages from the drivers with suggestions around pretty creative ideas about how to build the brand and how to build the audience. In typical sports, you don't see that from the athletes. It's a very zero-sum game.
Yeah.
So that's been refreshing.
Yeah, very good indeed. And your background, as we just said, it's not sensibly from motorsport. You have been involved in football. You've been in the US on American football, so I suppose soccer and football for our friends across the pond. Was soccer your first sport that you got involved with, or had you been involved in other sports prior to that?
From a professional standpoint, it was the first sport that I got involved in. I mean, I grew up in Montreal. I grew up as a ski racer. I grew up as a big ice hockey fan, so I've always been a fan of sport generally. And, you know, an appreciation for human endeavor, if you will. But I had no intention to work in sport. I studied economics and geology, actually, and then intended to be a business person. Did investment banking and private equity and ended up somewhat fortuitously working for Manchester United. And that was not necessarily something that I had dreamed of as a young boy, but I landed in that industry. And I guess now it's been 15 plus years, so I perhaps have a degree of experience at this point.
So it was kind of an opportunity that came up, and I guess it was something that was at the time probably too good to say no to. But what did you learn from your time at Manchester United? Because that was a pretty huge project, and you went through quite a few very important phases within the growth of that business.
Yeah, I think there were two big takeaways from Man United. One, when we started in 2006, the perception within the football industry was that Manchester United was already a behemoth. And at the time, you know, to put it in context, it was about 175 million sterling of revenue. And everyone thought it was massive. And I don't have the latest numbers, but Man United are upwards of 700 million sterling of revenue today. And so I think the vision that our owners at the time had of the potential for live sport to grow, to build as a business, and to not accept the status quo. So in other words, there was a belief that Man United were already a big club. Of course they were, but there was huge potential for growth. And that has a lot of application for me in terms of the mindset I try to bring to Formula E, where the success that the team have had and the championship have had in the last 5 years is really nothing short of remarkable. But equally, I'm incredibly optimistic about the potential for further growth. Mm-hmm. I think the second thing is it's really around the importance of, I'll call it brand, but how that expresses really to consumers. In the case of football, to call a club a brand is somewhat controversial. It's just a different word for looking after your customers and thinking about your end users, your fans. And so how can we make sure that we have that mindset here with Formula E? All of our stakeholders, whether it's fans of the championship, fans of the teams, fans of the drivers, how do we make sure we remind ourselves that we're really serving them? And if we do that, good things will follow.
Okay. And you, because you've had experience on both sides, you've worked in industries which have had nothing to do with sport, you've spent now quite a number of years in the world of sports. Do you think that you can manage and run a sport, whether that be a team or the series itself, purely as a business, as any other business? Or do you think that there are certain points when you look at running a sport which are actually unique because it is a sport?
I think there's been a trend in the last, call it decade or so, around sport opening up. And you have people coming from other backgrounds, from outside of a particular vertical. So it certainly happened in American football and European football. And I think that's generally a good thing, because I try to approach things with an open mind, and there's the best ideas can sit in all sorts of places. That being said, I think you have to be really cognizant that sport is different fundamentally in terms of the product. I mean, the end product really is the experience that a fan has watching, in the case of football, these fantastic athletes trying to score goals and win championships. In the case of motorsport, it's that blend of human endeavor on the sporting side with the engineering endeavor. And so I think you always have to be very cognizant of the distinctions and not simply bring in a blueprint from outside. But if you can apply some good first practices to a new industry and people are open-minded about that, then I think that's when you get interesting growth opportunities.
And if you look at your time between Manchester United and then going to the Rams, was the approach that you took there fundamentally different? You just mentioned about the basics. There's certain things which you can carry over and similarities between the two. But if you actually take a look at the two series, did you have to change your approach because of whether that be cultural or sporting differences?
Absolutely. I mean, look, there are some commonalities between two types of football. The games are very different, you know, in terms of the importance culturally to the population in the UK and to the population in the US for European and American football, respectively. So that level of passion is common. The business model, meaning how the teams and the leagues make money in terms of television rights, sponsorship, ticketing, a lot of that is very similar. But one of the reasons I was so attracted to the LA Rams opportunity was it was a very different challenge from a business perspective. You know, Manchester United has incredible heritage. You know, it's one of the most recognized brands in the world, let alone sporting brands. The LA Rams, it was effectively a startup with some history. So that, without getting into the long history, the team had been in LA for 50 years, left for 20, and then came back. And so that leaves scars. Of course, in Europe, that would be unimaginable that you'd move a team. So the good news is we had a little bit of heritage, but we effectively missed a generation of fans. And so if you were born from 1990 onwards in Los Angeles, you didn't have the LA Rams as your team. You could choose whoever you wanted based on who was on television. So we had to build a brand I don't want to say from scratch, but really from first principles. And so that is a fundamentally different challenge than building on an existing fan base such as Manchester United.
And I suppose with Formula E now, you're almost taking that to the next level when you say about sort of a startup approach. You've now got something which is not just a team, but a series, which has, yes, of course, been around for five full seasons now, has been incredibly successful over that time in terms of establishing itself, but is still very much at that kind of startup phase and going through a period of transition at the moment. Was that part of the attraction for you to get involved in that at this stage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a different challenge again. So with Formula E, first of all, we're working at the championship level, not at team level. So that has a different set of implications in terms of how the business model works and stakeholder management. So that's an interesting challenge. And yes, I mean, what Formula E has achieved in such a short period is incredible. And what you've seen is we've got different organic growth opportunities, right? So, for example, Mercedes joining the championship brings with it a level of heritage, a level of fan support, a level of professionalism that elevates what we're trying to do. And so we have to keep looking for these new opportunities to bring excitement and bring the best stakeholders into the championship.
I think you've been, as an organization, incredibly successful in doing that already. We've got a lineup in terms of the OEMs that are involved and the teams, which is really second to none. How do you now see Formula E developing over the next few years? What does it need to do to really cement itself as something that's really spearheading the future of motorsport?
Well, as I said before, I believe we have to start with the end consumer, the fan. Right? How do we make the product appealing to fans? How do we define our fans? Who are they? And then what would be attractive to them? And Formula E has some great intrinsic DNA. So first of all, it's an urban racing series, right? So we're racing in the cities, and I think that's a differentiated point. It makes it much more accessible, much easier to attend. And also, it's a different type of racing. Number two, we have the level of competitiveness on the grid is really phenomenal. Last year in 12 races, we had 9 different winners. We've had different winners in each of the first 3 races this year, with the results coming down to literally the final turn in Santiago last weekend. And so the level of competition is fantastic. And then you look at the teams and the OEMs being involved and the level of intensity and professionalism they bring. And then finally, you have the drivers themselves. People and fans want to associate with the athletes. And I think we've got a really interesting mix of some very experienced drivers who've had success in other championships who bring motorsport credibility. And then you have some really young guys coming through, such as Mercedes driver Nyck de Vries, who have had success in F2 and are really on the up. And if we can build stars and build that connectivity with fans, then I think we'll build something sustainable.
It's good that, I mean, you just mentioned Nyck there, and obviously we're very fortunate to have both him and Stoffel in the team, and Stoffel's come from having quite an illustrious career and driving in Formula One and so on and so forth. And there's some big names already in the sport. Is it important to have sort of characters in the sport, so people that not only have that raw talent, but actually, you know, that the public and the fans can relate to them and engage with them?
I think the first and foremost, I think fans want to see authenticity and they want to see talent, right? So I don't think you can index specifically for characters. I think fundamentally they want to see the best drivers performing at the top of their capabilities. Now, that being said, from an entertainment perspective, clearly having rivalry is something that is appealing on a human level, right? I mean, you see that in other sports where you have these great histories of certain teams playing each other or particular athletes competing against each other. So those are the human interest stories. And, you know, we want to try to identify the best drivers to the extent that they have a little bit of fun and a little bit of personality. That's all the better. I think what's interesting with Formula E is we've got, as you said, with Stoffel and Nyck and others, you know, some younger guys who grew up in a media environment that you know, where we live in today, where it's digital first. A lot of it is on social media. They have their own personalities and their own expressions. And to me, that's a piece, as we discussed earlier, what's great with Formula E is just how open and committed the drivers are to the championship. And I think we should do everything we can to encourage those personalities to come out.
Yeah. You just mentioned there about sort of digital media, the social media side of things being incredibly important. Sports traditionally, or the more established sports, have often used sort of TV reach as a key performance indicator, you know, for the success of the sport, to attract sponsors, to attract advertising. Do you think that that's still relevant today, or do you think actually we're seeing more of a switch towards sort of digital or internet-based media?
I don't think we can focus on one particular channel. We can really rely on a multi-channel approach, and that will ultimately lead to bigger, better engagement across the piece. And it feeds itself, right? So clearly, we're starting as a championship without that inbuilt audience, and so we have to build an audience through digital. Mm-hmm. But we'll try to use those channels to push people to tune in. And so, for example, in Santiago, I got some early feedback on the audience we had in the UK, which was much higher than last year for mm-hmm. the races. And we had a concerted effort to drive tune-in using our social channels. And so you can see the interplay between the different mediums.
Okay, so there are levers that you've got to play with to be able to try and promote that. And as you say, it's not one particular medium that you're going for, but it's to try and find the right balance across the things that are available.
That's right. And I think each of those media can help us tell different stories, right? Mm-hmm. What you see on linear TV when you watch a race will be very different than perhaps what the Mercedes EQ Formula E team is showing on their social and digital channels. So it's still fundamentally the same product. It's an automotive race and the athletes are there, but the exposure and the visibility and the angle you get into what's happening is very different. And I think that all stitches very nicely together in aggregate.
So sport, quite rightly at the moment, because there's been a lot of discussion about sustainability, about how different series are tackling that at the moment. There's a focus on that. You can read it pretty much in almost every other article currently. How important is that for Formula E as a series? How, you know, is that something that's going to be at the forefront of your overall strategy, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Formula E was founded with sustainability in mind. I mean, Formula E was started to address a challenge around the availability and the proliferation of electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. So we have sustainability in our DNA. My firm belief is that when Alejandro and the team started Formula E in 2014, the world was not looking for another motorsport series, nor was the world looking for another environmental advocacy group.
Yeah.
So those two constituents were very well served. The magic of Formula E, if you will, and the success that Alejandro and the team, with, you know, the support of the FIA brought, was let's bring those two themes together and create a differentiated product. And mm-hmm. I think whether you're a sport or whether you're any form of entrepreneurial company, there has to be that product market fit.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a distinct point of differentiation. And that's really the core of the success for Formula E. No doubt, though, in the last 5 years, the level of consciousness around sustainability and the importance of those issues has risen up the corporate agenda for many, many companies around the world and with consumers. And you see that manifesting itself in the media and in all the actions that a lot of companies are taking. And so I feel really confident and comfortable with where Formula E are in terms of our core mission, but there's no doubt that we need to continue to innovate and stay at the cutting edge around these topics to make sure that, you know, we continue to tell a story that is integrated around, you know, the importance of electric vehicle adoption in the context of a greater climate change debate.
Do you feel, because of the positioning of Formula E, do you feel a pressure to be benchmark, if you like, in the world of motorsport?
One of the surprises I've had is the degree to which this has been a point of debate. Mm-hmm. So when, as I reflect on the first 100 days, you know, when I started, I thought we were fairly unimpeachable on this topic. But there's no doubt that, you know, the level of media attention that we're getting as a result of the success that's been delivered, we have different stakeholders, higher number of people who are looking at what we're up to, and therefore the bar gets raised. And so like any good entrepreneurial business, we have to continue to innovate to stay at the cutting edge. That having been said, I'm also of the belief that, you know, some of the best companies are built with a singular focus, and we have one, and we're fortunate to have that. And so while I think we need to be very mindful of the overall ecosystem, I also want to be careful about not reacting to every action that other motorsports or other sports take.
Okay, yeah. So going back to sort of yourself and your background a bit, we spoke earlier about the fact that you'd grown up in Canada. Obviously, winter sports were very much in focus, be that ice hockey or skiing. You've worked now in a number of other different sports around the world. Where do you sort of take your inspiration from? Is there anything that you can think back of in your life that was a particular inspiring person or moment for you?
Well, look, I'm inherently adventurous. You know, we both have this kind of sense of adventure, and that comes from how I was brought up. At a very young age, my father has two passions. One is motorsport, interestingly, and the other is spending time in the Canadian wilderness. Mm-hmm. And so he and I used to do a lot of canoeing in very, very remote areas where you wouldn't see another human being for 4 or 5 days. And so that sense of adventure, I think, was plugged into me at a very young age, and I can't seem to shake it.
Okay, phenomenal. And how do you, I mean, it sounds like an incredible challenge, sort of being split over not only a number of different countries at the moment, but also just the sheer distance between those areas as well. How do you manage that from a work-life balance perspective?
I guess the first thing to say is, you know, my family is the most important thing, right? My wife and our two young boys. But equally, my wife and I have a shared philosophy that, you know, the best example we can give to those young boys is a sense of hard work and dedication. And, you know, with that comes, you know, some professional opportunities, but obviously that has trade-offs on the family side. So we believe that we're setting a really good example for them, but clearly, you know, we are not spending as much time with them on perhaps the traditional definition. And so, you know, we try to carve time out for that. For example, over the holidays, over the Christmas period, we all spent 3 weeks together in Canada, and we're really able to switch off. And, mm-hmm. you know, the nice thing about growing up skiing is it's a sport that you can do for the rest of your life as long as you stay reasonably healthy. And so that's an important activity we do together.
So the whole family of skiers, are they avid skiers?
Yes, we are. So yeah, you try to get as much time as you can together. And, you know, the nice thing with Formula E is our race calendar takes us all around the world. And so we'll also meet at some races and expose them to that. So we believe we're exposing our boys to a very modern view of the world, and it's a global, interconnected world, and they're going to benefit from that.
You spoke before about the wilderness and getting out there. Is that something, I mean, you're yourself now based in London, but obviously traveling a huge amount as well, despite having the opportunity to go skiing in over Christmas. Do you get other opportunities to just get out there and be on your own?
Well, at the moment, in the last few months, as I've been settling into London, I've had a little bit more time on my own. I very much enjoy running, so I do a lot of running. I ran the Berlin Marathon in September, shortly after starting this role. So I do enjoy running, and I also enjoy mountain biking. So okay. Those are kind of the two sports. And although on the face of it, they're similar in that they're aerobic activities, I like them for very different reasons. Running allows me to reflect and think about life and about what's going on in the world. And mountain biking is super intense and doesn't allow you to think. And so it's the best way to completely check out. Although last summer I dislocated my shoulder doing it, so I should probably be paying even more attention than I was.
So we can expect to see you on the EQ runs as they come up later in the season.
I'm very much looking forward to those. Absolutely,
very good indeed. I put you on the spot here of the season 6 calendar. Favorite city?
Well, my children were born in Hong Kong, and so I had I would have probably said Hong Kong, but obviously we won't be racing there this year, which is unfortunate. I've only been to Riyadh and Santiago so far. Those are two new cities for me. Mm-hmm. And they were fantastic in very different ways. And for me, coming back to that theme of adventure and exploration, that's what I love. I love discovering new places. So clearly we have an incredible calendar with Formula E, some of the great European capitals. You know, in the US, we have New York. We're coming back to London this year. I mean, we really have just a very special set of cities that we race in. So it'd be very hard to pick one over the other.
Do you think that, or do you hope that Hong Kong will come back in the future?
Well, I think Greater China is an incredibly important market for Formula E generally, and of course for our stakeholders, our teams, our OEMs, our sponsors. There aren't many businesses in the world with global ambitions that don't have a China strategy of, at the top of their agenda, and so I think that's very important for us.
And is there anywhere else in terms of whether that be a specific city or a country or region where you think that you'd like to take Formula E in that direction in the future?
Well, the challenge we're trying to address around climate change and the acceleration of electric vehicles, this is a global challenge and it's a global product. And that's one of the inherent attractions of the business is we, in theory, can go anywhere and tell a story that is very relevant to those markets. And so for example, this year on the calendar, we've added Seoul, which is a very advanced, global city. We're also going to Jakarta, where automotive penetration is much lower, the economic development of the country is much lower, but there's an opportunity perhaps to completely skip a generation. I think there'll be many Indonesians who will never know what a petrol car is because they'll go straight to electric to the extent that the economy continues to develop. So we can tell our story in very different environments. When I look at some of the countries where I believe we could and should be, you think about, large economic powerhouses with an appreciation for motorsport, markets where our commercial partners do a lot of business and have commercial opportunities. Clearly, Brazil in South America is a gap there. And I think there's a big opportunity in Japan as well.
Okay. And Japan would be phenomenal, I think, as well, as a place. I mean, we kind of, in a way, spot for choice. At the moment, we have, if I remember correctly off the top of my head, 15 events this year, or 14 events.
14 events, 12 cities.
Do you see the calendar having to grow? And we internally, we've had a lot of discussion about what the right size is for the series. What's your personal opinion on that?
Well, I'd like to see us continue to expand the championship. As I said before, the mission is global. It's relevant in a lot of different cities, and so as long as we can have a business model that makes sense, in my mind, we can continue to expand the championship, and we should do that. There are a whole host of constraints on that, including currently battery capacity. And so if you think about some of the inhibitors of electric vehicle adoption, right, that range anxiety, the capability of the battery is very important. So I think there's an interesting story to tell as the technology improves and the longevity of the batteries increases, that allows us to do more races, right? So I think there's a powerful story there from a consumer perspective as well. And then, of course, it just allows us to reach new fans and touch new markets.
So you wouldn't be averse to expanding or extending the series for a particular season?
No, I think we could go higher. As you said, we're at 14 today with two doubleheaders. I could certainly see us going to 15 in the near term, and then adding a couple from there.
Okay. It'd be interesting to see the direction that takes. And you mentioned about the technology side of things. We've got, after this season, another two seasons to go with Generation 2. And then we're going to get into Generation 3. There's been a fair amount in the press recently, now that the FIA are starting to tender, or started the tender process for that. Do you think that's going to add another element of excitement? And I suppose, more importantly for the OEMs, is it something which you feel a necessity to make sure that it continues to be relevant for the automotive industry?
Well, I think that's core to any evolution or changes that we make is the feedback and input from our stakeholders, the teams, and of course the OEMs who have a very significant stake in how the automotive industry evolves in the next decade. You know, Formula E, as we said before, was the genesis was all about, you know, accelerating electric vehicle adoption. We're 5 years into that journey. I think when we look forward to the Generation 3 car, we have to think about, okay, what story are we telling through this race, through this competition? And clearly, you know, the urban story will continue to be core, and the level of competitiveness on the grid is really important. And so we'll work hard to make sure that, as we do today, any team can win on any given day. And then I think we have to look at, from a consumer perspective, you know, what continue to be the inhibitors of electric vehicle adoption, and how do we try to address those? And while the tender has commenced, we're going to continue with a process where we engage with the teams and the OEMs to make sure we've got the best thinking from the overall ecosystem, and make sure that that reflects any changes and evolution we make reflects the collective view, because ultimately we want the teams and the OEMs to be successful and to be bought in. When we have that alignment that we talked about earlier in terms of the alignment to the same common goal and cohesive direction of travel, then that's when, you know, we can really build the championship.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was torn a little bit because in season five I had the great opportunity to sort of stand in the background and observe. And as a motorsport fan, it was phenomenal. You mentioned it before about having the, I mean, the nine different winners. I think we had, I think, seven different winners from seven different teams for the first seven races, and then it just sort of went on for that. And I think that that for me is the is really crucial to Formula E, that competitiveness. In the position that I'm in now, it's a total pain, of course, because you're never gonna. Doesn't matter what you do, you're never gonna be able to dominate the series. And at the end of the day, we're all in there to win. But I think for the health of the series, for the health of the sport, it's absolutely the right direction to go in. You've got attack mode and you've got fan boost as well. And both came under quite significant criticism initially internally, because people weren't quite sure how it was going to work. And then I think also once it was made public, there was skepticism, I think, as to whether it was going to work and whether it was going to add to the show. I think it's been proven without a doubt that it definitely adds to the show. And it's something which doesn't take away from the authenticity either. It's something which it just mixes things up in the right way. And the way that we work as a team, the discussions that we have about the strategy, how to use attack mode, for example, at what point to use attack mode, that is something which is incredibly complex. And I think actually gives the engineers and the strategists a real challenge as well. And I think that's a very healthy thing to do. So as long as the fans accept it, which clearly they do, that's good. But how do you, I suppose, as an organization, you've got all of these inputs which are coming in, all of these ideas. How do you then sort of filter that out and, as you said before, have the guts to take something which maybe is not initially popular and drive it through?
Well, I think you touched earlier on, you know, every sport, every environment has its own stakeholder set, and I think you used the term politics, and you know, people have their own interests. And so, you know, what I've been trying to do in the last 4 months is really just listen to as many people as I can. You know, I come with, you know, as I said before, I guess enough to be dangerous in the sense that I grew up watching motorsport a little bit with my father, but also having worked in two types of football, appreciating and knowing that, you know, you can be a fan of a sport and not really understand what's going on inside as an entity and as a business. And so I think I have an appreciation for that, and I'm just trying to listen and understand. And look, we have an aligned set of stakeholders, but clearly there are different points of opinion, you know, across the piece there. And as you said, Ian, you get a lot of pushback whenever you try to do something new from people who have a vested interest in the status quo, or from perhaps the media who, you know, would benefit from a degree of debate around the merits. I think what you try to do is, you know, focus on the core product and the fan, and look at it through those two lenses. Is it going to enhance the spectacle, and are the fans going to appreciate it? And so I think if you look at fan boost and attack mode, they serve very different purposes. Fan boost is very much an opportunity for the drivers to build a relationship with their fans and build up a degree of passion for them as individuals, or perhaps more broadly within their team context. And I think that's great, because that's what we're trying to do. The attack mode product is very much a wrinkle in the race, if you will. And if we believe that unpredictability is crucial to success of the championship in the medium term, which I personally believe it is, then that type of an innovation makes a lot of sense. Obviously, I'm saying that with a degree of hindsight. I wasn't there when the decision was made. But if you analyze it in hindsight, what it does is it adds a degree of unpredictability. It adds strategy or human decision making. And with that, you also have potential for human error. Mm. And or perhaps someone making a better decision than someone else, and that leads to a different result, which changes the outcome of the competition. So if you look at it through that lens, it makes a lot of sense. And so I think it's important for us to be open-minded and then to debate it and then make decisions and have conviction. But equally, we've got a wonderful product now. Yeah. So it's not a question of looking at it and saying, well, we have to come up with a new concept like this every season. My understanding of why attack mode came up is it tied to the longevity and capacity of the battery, which made the car swap not necessary. And so it was also innovation driven by a necessity to, or perhaps a desire to add a bit of unpredictability to the race. And that's kind of the core proposition.
That it's not just about the series and what the series can do, but it's the teams as well. You know, they all want to be the team that has the best fan base out there. It's been fascinating to see the different approaches that have been taken. I think there's some fundamentally different approaches, even between the four German OEMs, mm-hmm. who traditionally have been fairly well aligned in their approach to stuff. So it's been great to observe that. And I think that, let's say, I think we can play a very important role in that fan engagement and building up a fan base which is passionate for a particular team or a particular driver, and that helps as well to add to the interest in the sport and the excitement for people that have come there.
No, that's exactly right. I think there's a perception that, you know, the championship is doing the marketing and doing the brand building and doing the audience growth. And clearly we have a commercial responsibility to do our part there. But fundamentally, you know, we try to create an environment where the teams, the OEMs, and the drivers can express themselves and can be the best that they can be. And as we said before, that's really what sport is all about. It's human beings coming to appreciate the exploits of other human beings. And what's great and really refreshing in Formula E is we already had an incredibly competitive grid. And then this year, you know, we've had the addition of two German manufacturers. So it's the first time we've had all four racing in the same series. And as you say, everyone's bringing their own personality, their own brand identity, their own approach to storytelling in terms of why they're in Formula E. And, you know, I've seen, even whether it's in the garages and the design, or whether it's on social media, the different personalities of the brands, and you can see that playing out. And to me, that's a different level of competition, because everyone raises their game. And,
yeah.
And you know, we're collectively benefiting from that in terms of the audience. Clearly, with Mercedes and Porsche coming in, you have, I guess the equivalent would be, is it Alabama and Auburn?
Yes,
joined our league.
Very
and
much
so,
yeah.
You know, that's a wonderful opportunity for us and for our fans. And I think everyone else who was already in the championship, for them, it's great as well. They want to compete against the best, and they want to prove themselves against the best. And so, I think we're all seeing the fruits of that at the moment.
So we've just been past actually Mercedes-Benz Arena behind us there, which is the home of Stuttgart, and various things that we've arrived at the museum here. which is a bit of a pain, actually, because beautiful. I was hoping to get some carpool karaoke going with you, but clearly we've run out of time. So next time we'll have
to... My natural singing talent.
Trust me, it couldn't be any worse than I am. So, Jamie, I think that from my perspective, it's been brilliant to catch up with you, not only just from a Formula E side of things to get your thoughts on that, but also the wider aspects of sport and how that all fits in together. So thank you very, very much indeed for coming to visit us in Stuttgart today. And we'll look forward to seeing you at the next race.
Absolutely. No, it's my pleasure, Ian. Really fun riding with you and having a good conversation. I'm excited about the Mercedes EQ here.
Brilliant. All right. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you have heard, hit like and subscribe to We Drive the City on your preferred podcast platform. For the upcoming episodes, Ian James will meet inspiring people from each E3 host city. Stay tuned.